What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. The Memphis Grizzlies are currently on pace to break the NBA record for single season wins. They're on pace to go 82-0. Are they going to get there? What's the verdict? We got Candace, we got Isaac, we got David. And that game got a whole lot closer than what it should have. I'm not going to go into a rant this early in the show, but I will let you guys lead off with Isaac. Let's go to you, and then Candace, you can follow him up. What was number one biggest takeaway from last night's win against the New York Knicks? Final score was 115-112.
Interesting game, definitely. Grizzlies built their 19-point lead, man, and in true Grizzlies fashion, like, I guess it wouldn't be a Grizzlies opener if it didn't reflect what we're used to seeing from this team, and that's they have a propensity to blow big leads no matter who's on the floor. And we saw that again last night, man. That thing got way too close. I think that was a bad call at the end. I think that Ja Morant lay-in, that should have been a game winner. But, I mean, they ended up winning in overtime. A lot of crazy stuff going on. Evan Fournier out of bounds on that last shot. Glad it didn't go in. I mean, referees really, really struggled in that game. But I think the biggest takeaway is the young guys. I had questions about all these guys going into this game, and for one game, man, I think I like what I saw. I mean, especially Santi Aldama. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. I was a big believer of him coming out of Vegas and coming into the preseason. I had decided at that point that, yes, man, this is not just a fluke. This is real. This guy's a rotation player. He's going to be able to fit in. But I think he even exceeded those expectations last night. 18 points, 11 rebounds, assists, a steal, a block. I mean, he's doing things on the defensive end. He's 3 of 8 from three. I mean, this is he's going to be awesome off the bench when Jaren Jackson Jr. comes back. Again, I mean, I noticed this one game, but he's going up against Julius Randle, man, and doing this. He's for real, man. It's just another hit by this front office. I mean, and I talked to you about this earlier, and I put this out on Twitter, and we were kind of talking about Aldama, and David was saying how a lot of people didn't believe in him. And it was quite the transformation because, I mean, even going back to the Utah Summer League, he still looked like that deer in headlights guy we saw year one. That didn't look like you saw any improvement from him in Summer League and you, from year one. And somewhere, man, between Utah and Vegas, the flip switched, and he's been awesome ever since. And I think to do it in the regular season up against a guy like Julius Randle, man, I was super, super impressed with him. And again, but from my thoughts, like, he wasn't the guy that I was worried about. I knew or felt like he was a rotation player. But LaRavia came in, man, did some nice things as well. Did some things on the defensive end, did knock down a three-pointer, looked good on that shot. So, man, through one game, man, so far so good, man. I had questions about that bench, but last night they did some good things. Now, I think pump the brakes on, like, some people are already, like, doing victory laps. Man, young guys and rookies.
82-0, baby. 82-0.
There's going to be some ebbs and flows for these guys, man. So don't do a victory lap yet. There's some like, oh, yeah, see, I told you, LaRavia and blah, blah, blah. It's one game, man, and they did. This was a bad Knicks team, and they did have to go to overtime to beat this team. It's not like they were up by 19, but they did have to end up going to overtime. So love what I saw of the guys, man. Happy to see it, but I'm not thinking that we're going to get this for the rest of the 81 games that we have left. They're going to be ebbs and flows with these guys, so have patience with them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think my biggest takeaway is just next man up mentality is still alive and well, still thriving, which is good to see. You know, you had questions about that, but I think Ja is just, it's Ja, man. A next man up mentality doesn't quite work if it's not for Ja putting on the show that he did. That's just the reality of the situation. You know, you had Bane struggling and you did get some contribution from other people. It was like Santi Aldama, I agree, had a really good game. John Contra was able to provide some points. Which is a surprise to me, but I'm with Isaac. It's one game, and I never thought that they'd be incapable of doing it. It's just a matter of the consistency level. Yeah. So we'll see. That's yet to be seen. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, everything revolved around Ja Morant and just the incredible game that he had, you know, putting himself in the conversation for MVP already. You know, I saw pretty much his ESPN as a heavy topic of conversation already just because of that performance that he put on. And so it's looking good. I mean, as long as you got 12 on the court, you're always going to have a chance. I'm happy for them being able to make do. It was pretty a surprise. Everybody knew Jaren was going to be out. A lot of people suspected that Zaire might not play in the opening night game. But what was a surprise and a really heavy hit was Dylan not being able to play, not being available. And so despite that, this team was able to shift and adjust. I saw some people complaining about some of the rotations, but man, you're going to have some weird rotations when your only shooting guard is now playing forward and you're the only backup shooting guard playing forward. And so it was some tough rotations in there, absolutely. But, you know, it's only so many guys available at this point. So a good game, good effort. It got way closer than it had to, but it just came down to the bench not being able to score on their own. You know, when Ja was off the floor, that's when they started losing those minutes. And, you know, it was some of those same issues that I had concerns with, but they won at the end of the day. And ultimately, if those concerns I have in terms of rim protection and three-point shooting, if they're still going to be able to pull it out and grind out those wins until they get back healthy, I'm cool with that. I mean, the ultimate thing I'm concerned about is will you be able to take advantage of the relatively easy schedule they have, you know, to start the season. They can do that. They can still capitalize and still get some wins out. At the end of the day, I know once they get back healthy, they'll be fine. So I'm really pleased. I'm happy with what I saw. Happy they were able to pull out the win at the end of the day. And that's pretty much all that matters for me.
All right. So I've got a few things here. I'm going to lead off with this. Isaac made the comment about this being a bad Knicks team. And I don't want to give them too much credit, but this team is not far removed from being one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. And I know that they had a rough season last year, but point guard makes a huge difference. And I know a lot of people were crapping on Jalen Brunson and 15 points and 9 assists.
Include me.
I mean, I'm not disappointed. It was not just you. Like, if I want to call you out specifically, I will, but it wasn't just you. And if you watch the fourth quarter of this game, you saw why they paid Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson in the fourth quarter of the game, he had multiple possessions where he was orchestrating that offense and he was getting anywhere that he wanted to get. That's what got them back into the game. Cam Reddish played extremely well, knocked down a three to tie the game. But I don't know that I would go as far to call this a bad Knicks team. There's some stuff that they've got to work out. But it would not surprise me to see this Knick team in the Eastern Conference playoffs this year.
Oh,
based
no,
off of talent alone, man. Like you're talking like
I'd agree with
RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Jalen Brunson. You got Isaiah Hartenstein, which is a really good bench center for this team, especially considering the foul trouble that you see from Mitchell Robinson pretty frequently. You know, Hartenstein ended up, he played 40 minutes last night, 16 points, 4 assists, 8 rebounds. He played well. Like, that's going to be a good bench center for them. Cam Reddish, you saw what he was capable of last night. He was torching the Grizzlies. Obi Toppin only played 13 minutes, but he's better than the 2 points that he put up. I think that this team is not going to be in the upper echelon of teams in the league, and the Grizzlies should have beat them and beat them probably a little more handily than what they did. That 19-point gap, I don't know that the Grizzlies are 19 points better than this team, but I think that they are better than having to go to overtime to beat this team. The second thing that I want to mention is we talked about being short in rotations, but you still have to be smart with what you got. And I will die on this hill playing Brandon Clark and Steven Adams at the same damn time does not work. You can show me stats. You can show me on and offs. You can show me whatever in the hell you want to show me. I don't give a flying flip. Watch the game. They were combined. Adams and Clark were on the floor together for 25 possessions last night. They were a negative 52. The offensive rating was 104. The defensive rating with both of those guys on the floor, 156. This is one game. It's a small sample size. You can pull up the stuff from last year. But Brandon Clark is not a damn three-point shooter. And him parked in the corner.
Please get out of the corner.
Like, it's handcuffing him. You're neutralizing one of your most – like, he is one of your best offensive weapons out, like, because of his ability to roll, his ability to leap, the things that he can do, you're completely neutering him, leaving him in the corner. You saw him trying to shoot those threes last night. I know damn well that coaching staff saw it, and he looked terrible. His form still looks clunky. Love him to death. Let him be a roll man. Brandon Clark does not need to be more than 10 foot away from the basket. You should not ever at any time play Brandon Clark and Steven Adams together. Ever. I don't care how much you like them. I don't care how much you want to come at me with what you see from last year. And I don't have the lineups pulled up from last year, but I can pull it up. And I can guarantee you the positive is not better than negative 52. Like, it's not enough that it's going to offset this negative 52. That lineup was garbage. I could see it last night in the game. I didn't realize it was going to be this bad. But when I pulled up the stats, I was like, I knew it was awful. I could tell it was awful. And you are just locking down one of your best players for no damn reason. Put Roddy out there. He didn't shoot the ball well, but he played well. Put LaRavia out there. He shot the ball better than Roddy. He played well on the defensive end. Put Brandon Clark at the five or keep Adams at the five. Do not put those guys out there together and come at me on Twitter and try to argue with me. I don't care. I'm not even going to talk to you about it, because if you sit here and you watch basketball, there is no way in hell that you can tell me that you think Brandon Clark and Steven Adams on the floor at the same time is going to lead to good basketball. It does not. I've seen it enough. And last night, the 25 possessions, I pray, and I know it's going to be more, but I pray that we don't see another, not one possession for the rest of eternity with Brandon Clark and Steven Adams on the floor at the same time, unless they're on opposite teams.
I think you're going to see it. I hate it, but yeah, man, he needs to completely scrap that three-point shot. I know he's searching for that magic that he had and that small sample size in his rookie year, but just not coming back, man. I don't know what happened to his shooting form. The shooting form still looks bad. I mean, like he's not even close on those 3-point attempts. He makes most of that hit side rim. He's not even close to knocking them down. And you just paid this guy. I mean, you're completely neutralizing what he does best by putting him in that position. There's no reason to have those guys on the floor together. We've talked about that on here, and it's just a bad mix. I'm glad, like I said, they decided to bring him out the bench and start Santi Aldama, but then you're still mixing and matching. That's not the mix and match that you need. Like you said, put LaRavia Roddy in that spot. You do not need to have Brandon Clark and Steven Adams on the floor together. I mean, it just does not work. I mean, I think we've seen enough of it, saw some of it last year, and it's never good. I'm sure I don't know what the numbers are. I haven't pulled the numbers from last year, but I'm sure it's bad then too. I don't know if I've ever seen them on the floor together and it looked good, or they had a lot of success with both of those guys on the floor. So it's going to be weird. I mean, you have those three guys out, got some new guys working in, but there's ways around that, having those two guys on the floor together. Like I just mentioned, put LaRavia out there, put Roddy in that spot. It's just not going to work between those two.
Play Clark at the five, Aldama at the four.
Clark
at the five, play Roddy at the four. You got, like, X played some – he played minutes last night. Play Clark at the five and exit at the four. Like, you can't keep putting those guys out there. I've got the numbers up. They played together 324 possessions last season. Their total net was – they were positive 10.5. But the defensive rating defense with those two guys on the floor is 116.4. And I don't know what led the league last year, but I'm pretty sure – or what was the worst in the league. But I'm pretty sure 116.4 has got to be damn close to it. And so even though they had a positive impact on the offensive end of the floor last season
– and that even surprised me a little bit, but go ahead.
Their biggest – like their – the best lineup, the reason it was like they had three shooters with them, all of their positive lineups, they had three guys that can knock down a three: Tyus Jones, Melton, and Bain. John Morant, Bain, and Melton.
Well, they did it twice in the playoffs, so I've got the playoff numbers. And I think what my conclusion is, it is completely based off of matchups, but it is either boom or bust. So they did it seven times. They had only seven possessions, but they did that in the playoffs. But in the playoffs, they had one lineup with Ja, Brooks, Bane, then Clark and Adams. That was plus 50, right? But then they had another one with Tyus Jones, D-Mel, Dez, and Bane, Clark, Adams, and that was negative 33. So, I mean, it's really – it hardly ever works it's definitely not something you can depend on regularly at all. And when you do do it, you want to be specific about the matchups and, you know, who you're playing on the floor. Very specific situations in which you want to do that. And it's not something I think the team can lean on. And I think it's even worse now because, you know, right now the wing depth is a huge issue. So on top of the wing depth issue, it only exacerbates it. I'm not surprised at those numbers just because we're limited on shooters anyway at this point. Yeah. And so you throw that in there on top of having two non-shooters on the floor. That's
if
murder.
If you play X out there with him, X is not a crazy good shooting threat, but he's got a better chance at knocking down that corner three than Clark does. And that just, it just, when they made those changes to his mechanics, and I'm sure that it was something to prevent injury from him, because if it's not going to injure him, why mess with it? But ever since they made that change, he has just not looked the same as far as shooting the ball. Last year you saw the bounce back and you saw the pogo stick, the soft floater. Touch, the finishes around the rim.
Yeah.
You saw the good Brandon Clark, but his shot, his free throw percentage, it's just clunky, man. And that is,
those shots are sometimes you see him shoot. I mean, it'll break the rim. Like it does not look good at all. Like he needs to stay in the paint, man. That's his bread and butter. Like you said, 10 foot around the rim, those little push shots, the floater and stuff like that, man. That's where he needs to live, man. They have other guys out there that can make mid-range shots and stuff like that. You just don't need that from him. That's not going to be his game. It looked like his rookie season that he had some three-point shooting potential, but like you said, whatever they did with his shot, he even talked about it going into their second season that they did it to improve his shot, and that's definitely not the result that he got. Like, I don't know what they did to it, but that shot that he has now, man, it's broken. I mean, that's...
I used to give him a pass on it, man, because the season, like I did, I'd give him a pass on it because the season that they made the changes, it was the shortened off season, so he didn't get the reps up. But we're, two or three full seasons now into, what year is this? This is year four for Clark. So, yeah, this is – we're through two full seasons. This is the start of the third season. And he had a full off season this time to get reps in with that, you know, that form, and it still looks clunky. So, it sometimes you just got to go away from it, man. I know what the game is. I know you need guys that can stretch the floor. But you can be successful with him not being able to stretch the floor. Like, he'll be just fine. And I just don't want to see it. He took 2 3-point shots last night. Give literally anybody on the team those 2 3-point shots.
And there's a reason why his shot's always wide open. There's a reason why guys are not guarding about the corner. He's just standing there passing the ball.
Folks aren't guarding Draymond Green from the 3-point line. Because you know better. It's like, take it. I don't care what the analytics said. This dude couldn't hit water with a rock from 10 feet away. Like, let him take it. So, anyway, I'll get off my soapbox on that one. We can talk about the free throw mess. You know, I always like to mention that. And
not good.
At one point when Tyus missed that first free throw in overtime, Candace was sitting in the same row as me, and I looked over and she was just staring at me. I'm like, don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Free throws.
I couldn't believe that. I was like, Tyus, come on, man. Tyus missing too? I was like, man, that's crazy, man.
You know, and that's, I was talking to my buddy on the way home, and he's like, you know, you got Steven Adams. You can't expect them to shoot good from the free throw line, but you remove Steven Adams' 4 free throw attempts. The Grizzlies were 13 for 19 for 68%. And I, for one, expect much better than that from a team.
Yeah, you need to be at least around 75. I mean,
you can't win playoff series shooting 68% from the line. If you shoot 68% from the line in a playoff series, it is going to beat you. It will happen. I guarantee it. If you can't make free throws at the end of the game, the other teams are going to start fouling you earlier. they are going to put you in positions where you have to make those free throws to beat them. And yeah, it's the first game. Like it's, you know, you hear the team say all the time, not too high, not too low. You know, I want to come on here and scream, we're going to the ship because Aldama's a double-double and he's going to the bench in a month. You know, that's going to just add to the depth of this team.
Yeah.
But it's game one, so you're going to have some hiccups. I just hope that they look at what we saw last night with Adams and Clark, and Clark parked in that corner and steer away from it. I know that we'll see that lineup again. I know we'll see them out there again. But it just makes me sick thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to get you guys' opinion on this. Because I, for one, saw that David Roddy, I think I saw Isaac notice that he mentioned on Twitter that David Roddy was the first one off of the bench. So I kind of thought that, you know, that he had sort of won, we talked about before, who were they going to lean on. And I thought it was David Roddy. But when you look up the final end of the game, they both got 12 minutes. And so we had kind of talked about David Roddy being the more NBA ready guy, the guy who probably come off the bench and provide a little bit more. But it seemed like in this game, at least, that Jake LaRavia was able to kind of step up. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on sort of how you thought the rookies did. I mean, it's more than one two rookies, obviously, but you know, these are the guys that they got the minutes. How you think that they did, and do you think this changes anything about the projection?
Well, I think to start out the game, I think it was exactly what we thought it was. I think Roddy had kind of separated himself, and that's kind of why Taylor went to him first. But I think he was really struggling offensively. I mean, he didn't score, went 0-6 from the field, 0-2 from three. And I think once he struggled, I think they decided, okay, well, we're going to try LaRavia. And LaRavia played better, and that's kind of why you saw him in there in the fourth quarter. I think they just saw Roddy struggling, and they decided to go with LaRavia. So I think that's going to be something that you might see go back and forth until somebody really solidifies themselves. Because, I mean, before this, it's all been preseason, summer league stuff. This is regular season basketball now, so these guys are going to have to earn their stripes. And I think Roddy struggled a little bit. He did some good things on the defensive end, don't get me wrong. But I think offensively, he just really struggled, so they decided to go with LaRavia. But I think you're going to see that flip-flop back and forth until somebody really kind of solidifies himself. And I think when Zaire comes back, we'll see what happens then with the minutes there. I think that'll kind of probably lessen some of their minutes there, but I think it's going to go back and forth. I don't think either one of those guys is really, really separate themselves, because you want to see what they're going to do in the regular season, and that's test number one. And offensively, Roddy didn't have LaRavia. Definitely looked like the more ready player last night, but I don't think that's going to be the case all the time. Like you said, it's going to be kind of ebbs and flows with these guys as the season goes on.
Yeah. Roddy he didn't shoot the ball well. But I didn't feel like he played bad. I know you look at 0 for 6, and there wasn't much. He had 2 offensive rebounds, 1 assist, and that was it. But it didn't feel like it was deer in the headlights type stuff.
He just
couldn't
look
get
out
the
place.
Shot to fall, you know. And that's, you know, that comes with rookies, right? You're going to have that with rookies. I like what both of them were able to do defensively. And honestly, I didn't know, or not that I didn't know, I didn't expect Roddy to be this effective on the defensive end of the floor. And it's not like he's a, you know, lockdown defender, just, you know, shutting everybody down. But there were quite a few times last night that I was watching him out there, and he was just in the right spots doing the right things on the defensive end. And when you're playing team defense, that's the most important part. You can be an elite defender, but if you're not in the right spot, doesn't matter. And Roddy was in those spots on the defensive end. And I think that's really where it's going to matter most for these guys. Jake LaRavia played well last night too. 1 for 2 from three, knocked down 2 free throws. I feel like Roddy has the edge right now, but I agree with Isaac in the fact that you're probably going to see them go back and forth. The one positive about the injuries right now is the fact that you have these games early in the season, so you're getting minutes for these guys right now against rotation players. So for these next however many games, they're missing Zaire and they're missing Dylan. And, you know, the Dylan thing with him being listed as doubtful, you know, I think that we see him come back I would say Monday against the Nets at the latest.
They're going to need it for sure.
But, you know,
I think they may play them Saturday.
You think, and that's a good possibility.
The second night of the because
I mean, you going up against Luka, man, it would be nice to have him for that. But definitely on Monday, that's a tough matchup. So, I mean, I definitely think he's back by Saturday. I'd be surprised if he's back, even if he's not back by Saturday, because with him being doubtful, that means that he's probably not going to play. But even if there was a thought that he could play last night, even a little bit, you think he'd be back after missing two games?
Yeah, I think he did warm up. But game time decision. He wouldn't gonna work. I didn't expect him to really play anyway. With it, like you said, with it being doubtful. But you know, sometimes they can be questionable that next game. But I think just off the principle that it is a back to back, he probably could have come back Friday. But I just think that they're gonna reserve that. They're playing Rockets.
This is the back to back.
Figure they can handle that and just put him in against Luka. I agree that would be valuable, especially having somebody with fresh legs. Being able to come in and guard Luka, I think, would be a big help.
Fresh hairdo too. Fresh hairdo, man. And rocking a new look, man. I don't know if that's a thumbs up or a thumb down, man. It seems like most people went thumb down on it. But to kind of go back to what we were talking about LaRavia and Roddy, and I've talked about being younger and less experienced on the bench. I think a positive, we're talking about them on the defensive end, is both of those guys seem to have a basic understanding, like David talked about Roddy, about where he was always in the right, he was in the right spots, and they seem to have a baseline of guys that have potential to grow on defense. I don't think either one of those guys are going to be a sieve. I mean, LaRavia has been super disruptive. He had a steal and a block last night. I mean, he has good defensive instincts, and both of those guys, they're not guys that don't try on the defensive end. And I think they have that baseline of guys that can be coached up to be solid players on that end. So I think that's a real positive for both of those guys. I think they're gonna be pretty solid defenders when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to whoever can provide the most offensively, and they're going to just roll with that. And you're right, I think it might go back and forth if nothing else, that like the concept of rookies being inconsistent, whoever's having the off night, they're going to try the other one, and hopefully we can find some balance that way to round out. Maybe that's the strategy, I don't know, but hopefully that works out, especially with them being down so many wings at this point. So they'll be needed, that's for sure. But speaking of defense, I really wanted to acknowledge Ja Morant and his defensive effort, which was big. That block shot, big clutch block shot as well. And you could just see his effort. You could just see him, being more intentional about staying in front of his man, trying to fight through screens. He was more intentional. And what was good for me to see and encouraging is that he didn't have any steals, which is something that he regularly had in the preseason. And of course, it's preseason, but I think he was shouldering so much of the load just offensively, him trying to make sure that he got everybody going. I think he sort of felt that they're down guys and he really kind of needs to take over. So I really think there's even upside for him to even get better. I mean, he'll get better throughout the year anyway, but I think that's a real great opportunity. I don't think he was looking for those opportunities in too much in this particular game, but I think as he sort of gets some of his help back, he probably will. And so I was just curious. I did look up his defensive rating for that one game. It was one game, but it was at 110, which is at least average. So at least that puts him at net, neutral defensively, which we always said, if he can even just be a net neutral, that would be good. And like I said, I think there's more ways he can grow in terms of getting steals. And so he could easily, make that even lower as the games progress. So that was extremely exciting to see that it's carried over from what we saw in preseason to the regular season.
Yeah, I was happy. There was one play where he was guarding Evan Fournier and he blocked the shot, but because he jumped forward toward Fournier and he was in the landing space, they call a foul, three shot foul. But Ja blocked it clean. Yeah. If he was in position where he could have went straight up there to block the shot, straight up and straight down, would have been fantastic. It was still a pretty good play, but because of the rules, it ended up being a foul. That there were definitely multiple occasions where you saw the effort from him. You saw him kind of pushing, and if that's his level, if that's where he goes to the next level this year, is on the defensive end, I can't freaking wait to see this team healthy.
Yeah, man, definitely a more concerted effort on the defensive end. We saw it all throughout the preseason and it carried over into last night. But one thing that I observed last night, we've seen Ja in the past kind of pick his spots. Not that he hasn't been great in the first half and in the third quarter, but we used to always talk about full quarter Ja. One thing about last night, he came out from the onset like imposing his will and kind of did it throughout the game. It wasn't pick a spot here. Sometimes you see him kind of defer to other guys at times and doesn't really push it. And then in the fourth quarter, he kind of tried to take over the game. He started off from the tip. He was ready to go. And I mean, he ended up scoring 34 points. I really do think he's going to be right in the mix for that MVP conversation because I think he's going to average 30 points a game this year. I mean, he's on another plane right now. I mean, you can year after year, he adds something to his game. And you talk about the defensive end. If he starts even, like you said, just a net a zero on a defensive end, it's going to be ridiculous. They're knocking down the three last night. What was he from three? 3 of 6 from three. I mean, knocking down the three, getting better on the defensive end. I mean, I don't even know what to say, man. Good luck to opposing defenses because I think Ja Morant just posed to have a otherworldly year. And that's talking about going back to the year last year that he had and how great that was. I think he's going to even top that. And that's crazy to say. And we've talked about his ceiling. I don't even know if he has one. I mean, it's just ridiculous what this guy's doing. And I think we saw that on full display last night. And this is game one. I mean, he hadn't even got warmed up yet, man. So I think it's going to be a special season, man. I think we're going to see some incredible stuff from Ja this year and going into the future, man. It's just fun. You have to pinch yourself to realize that he's here in Memphis, man. He plays for the Memphis Grizzlies, man. It's just crazy.
And my dream came true. It was a few times where it cut him off at the lane and he just put that floater up. Oh, man. And sometimes it didn't go in. It didn't always go in for him, but you want to see him. I want to see him take that shot, cut him off in the lane, try to hit that floor, a couple mid-range shots. I saw it was a little bit more obvious. I mean, from time to time, you see him do it maybe once. Sometimes, like, if that one doesn't go in, you kind of abandon it. But I saw him, you know, a few times, even though
it didn't always go in,
he took the shot. And that's all you can ask for. I mean, eventually it'll go in for him because he's got the touch. It's just a matter of probably – the practice. He can hit that shot. He really can. And so I just want to see him continue to work on that along with the 3-point attempts. You like to see the attempts. Six attempts is a good it's good for him, especially if he can hit half of
them. If you knock down three, yeah. I'll take that every night.
I don't know if he'll always be able to do that because he's always been kind of streaky. But you know, you still just want to see him. I mean, when the three isn't going down, you want him to get comfortable with that mid range shot because he can always go to that. And so you just saw him be a three-level scorer, two-way guy, and all around. I think you see him being aware of that's sort of what it takes. You got to be able to provide something on the defensive end if you want to win the MVP and if you want to, you know, be able to provide championship-level play to your team. I think he's better understanding what that looks like, and he's putting in the work. He's putting in the work, and it's showing up now.
Yeah, I was saying over the offseason, since he's been in the league, time after time, man, go watch Chris Paul. Watch Chris Paul tape. To those pull-up mid-ranges, man, because if he can perfect that, I mean, he's already pretty unguardable. If he gets that mid-range going consistently, there's just nothing you can do. I mean, he can pull up from three, he can take the mid-range, take your dribble, go into the basket. I mean, it's just going to be scary season, man. It's already that, but if he gets that mid-range, man, just he's going to be completely unstoppable, and that's when you're talking about MVP and everything like that.
Right. And one last thing on Ja before we move on. I know I talked about him a bit, but the guy had 9 assists, and the team shot was at 38% from the field, 38.9% from the field.
Nine assists and had 34 points, and super efficient, and everything. I mean, just doing it all, man.
So nobody could shoot, and he still had nine assists. Man, yeah. that is incredible. Like, imagine on a night that the team actually can shoot like 45, dare I say, percent from the field. Man, I mean, he could have easily had high number double digit assists. You know, some shots that were just easy open looks that just guys couldn't knock down. When you look at the mid range shots, that is a couple of them didn't go down. You look at the assists that a couple guys couldn't make. He could have easily been like 40 and 20.
40, easily last night.
There were a few shots that he got Bane where Bane was wide open and Bane was not himself.
Yep,
and he missed the shots, and so you know he was just. You know, a couple roles from, you know, double digit assist. You know, we're talking about Ja and Isaac mentioned him not really having a ceiling. I met some people last night. They come down the row, and the wife was like, "Oh, we're going to be buddies." And she was wearing a Knicks shirt. And I was like, "We are absolutely not going to be buddies." Like, you came in here wearing the wrong shirt. But we had a great conversation during the game. And before it started, one of the things that she asked me, she said, "Who is your GOAT?" And, you know, it's for me, that conversation is kind of, it's loaded. Like, it depends on what era you grew up watching basketball in. There are a lot of arguments for different guys, but at the end of the conversation, I'm like, I hope that at some point we can insert Ja into that conversation. And based off of what he said at the presser and the media day at the beginning of the year, you know, they're like, "Oh, you're a top 10 player.
You want to move up now?"
Yeah. He's like, I'm not satisfied with it. He has that drive. And I think if you ask almost anybody, they're gonna kind of tell you that. But there's a difference between somebody saying that and then actually putting in the work to get to that. And I feel like Ja Morant is a guy that has the work ethic and he has the talent that he can get to the point where he will be the face of the NBA and the best player in the league. Does that happen this year? Does it happen next year? I don't know. I don't know. Like, there's no guarantee that it's going to happen at all. But if it doesn't, it's not going to be lack of effort on his part. So, you know, yeah, we ate up a lot of time talking about Ja Morant. But if you're listening to a Grizzlies podcast,
hey, that's what it's going to be.
You want to hear that? You want to hear somebody talk about something else? This is not the podcast for you, because we're going to talk about Ja Morant. And I'd be willing to bet you, if it's a Grizzlies podcast, you're going to be hearing his name quite a bit anyway.
I was going to say real quick, man, I know we've been loading up on Ja, but I definitely think he has that gene. Like, a lot of guys say that, "Oh, I want to be the best. I want to do this. I want to do that." But there have been guys like MJ, Michael Jordan, Kobe was like that. If you go to other sports, talk about Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, they just have this mentality where they feel like they're the best MF on the floor or the field every time they walk out there. And they have this drive to whatever they need to do to be the best. They're going to put that work in to do that. And we've seen it summer after summer that he's come back and gotten better and better. And I just think one day he's going to get there, because I believe he believes that he's going to get there, and he has the talent to get there. Like, a lot of guys, you can say certain things, and sometimes you're not talented enough. I don't care how hard you work, you're never going to be the best player in the league. I really do think Ja Morant could be the best player in the league one day when we look up. Like, I really do believe that. That's not homerism, because we're covering the Grizzlies and we're in Memphis. I really do believe that. If he was on another team, I would probably say the same thing. I feel like he has the work ethic and the talent. You put those two things together, I think he can get there.
Yep. I 100% agree with that, man. That is – and he's in Memphis. He wants to be in Memphis. I feel like, as Grizzlies fans
– love it.
You know, we cover the team, but as a fan of basketball and a fan of this team, I am like, we're getting to watch this firsthand. And so it's, I feel like it's all up from here for this team. And yeah, it's one game, right? Like, not too high, not too low, but I think you can stay at a certain level of high whenever it comes to your expectations for Ja Morant. Because the bar that we set for him, I feel like it's never going to be as high as the bar that he sets for himself.
100%. I agree.
So, you know, Bane had kind of an off night. There was a scare. He went off the floor and went back into the locker room. The training staff worked on him. Post game, Taylor Jenkins and I, for whatever reason, short busted and closed that tab. So I don't have his exact quote up anymore, but essentially he just said it was cramps, nothing to be concerned
about.
What
he said?
So, you know, I got a little frustrated, because when he came back out, and I know that was his competitiveness, like, he wanted to be out there because that's his mentality. But, you know, it's game one of 82. If it is just cramps, get him off the floor and, like, you know, get him a treatment, get something on it. And maybe if they go away completely, you bring him back out there. But if you lose this first game, it is not even close to the end of the world. But if you lose Desmond Bane for the rest of the season because you pushed him too hard in game one, your season is going to be struggling. You know, and that's so I am more on the I guess, be cautious side of it. And I got the quote of it said, he just cramped at the end. Obviously, credit to him, the performance staff, for getting him ready to come back in. But we just felt like, hey, let's be cautious here. We've got a long season ahead of us. It was just cramping, nothing concerning. But if they were being cautious, why the hell did they put him back out on the floor?
Well, I was going nuts. Like, I was right there with you. I'm like, why is this dude on the floor? This is game one of 82, and this man, not only was he a liability, just take that part of it out of it, a liability on defense especially, because there was one play where Knicks got back up court, and he just laboring, couldn't even get back on defense. I'm like, this is game one of 82, man. If you lose this game, there's nowhere near important as important if you lose Desmond Bane for a significant amount of time, man. Just set him down, man. I mean, it's we next man up mentality. This team is built on that. Do not have this guy on the floor right now. Like I
next man up. What happened? When they go next man up, when they send him to the bench because he can't get up and down the floor, Tyus Jones comes in the game, and the next offensive possession, Tyus Jones knocks down a massive three.
Bane had been struggling anyway, so I'm not really sure why you'd feel like he's just honestly, he had it that whole night when before the quote unquote cramps, and so I'm not sure why you'd lean on him in those moments anyway. Jenkins has a tendency to go with the hot hand, and that just wasn't Bane. Not that night. Not last night.
I feel like he's the second best player on this team.
I think that's what it is.
Push comes to shove. I want him on the floor, but it's not in game one, game one of 82, not in game five of 82. Early in the season, man, get in the locker room and get treatment on that thing. Let's get you better for the next game. I want to win, but as much as you have to have regular season wins to get into the playoffs, we saw last year, you have to be healthy whenever you get to the playoffs in order to win. Like, and so having him, I just wasn't a fan of the way that it was handled. But, you know, it's just cramps. Everything is good. Nothing concerning. I hope that's the case. We'll find out. And he wasn't on the injury report today. So if it was anything more than that, I felt like we would get maybe some sort of injury update. But there was nothing on him today.
Yeah, I don't agree with the situation, but I think it was just what you said. He's the second best player on the team, and I think Taylor wanted to show, okay, I believe in my guy. I'm going to let him push through, but yeah, man, this is game 182, and even if it was game 10 of 82, game 15 of 82, I wouldn't have put it back out there. I mean, because they said it's just cramps, and that was surprising to me, man, because I was extremely worried. I know you two were at the game watching it on television, the way he went over to the sideline, and you could hear him yell out an expletive when he went down to the bench and kind of lay down on the floor. That didn't look good at all. I was thinking knee injury when I saw it. I was like, man, this does not look good. Taylor Jenkins said it's just cramp. You say he wasn't on the injury report today.
I will tell you 100% it was not a knee injury, because
that's what they were reporting on the broadcast. They were saying knee injury. So,
now, when I saw him start favoring, like, he was limping a little bit, but there were times when he was bending over and he was arching his back, or he was rubbing, like, right. If you have had sciatic nerve pain, you know that pain that you get that kind of shoots up from, like, your hip and it runs all the way up, like one side of your body? That's what it looked like to me. Like,
And he had a back problem in the playoffs, so
I don't know, but
that's what I thought it was. Because one thing in particular that stood out to me that scared me was when I can't remember if he was the one that lost the ball. It was a turnover, and it was, you know, a hustle down. This is an overtime. It's a hustle down to go to the other end, and the ball is right in front of Desmond Bane, and he can't even bend over to get it. Like, it's right in front of him, and the Knicks comes up behind him and grabs
him. Why is he in the game? That's the point, man. Like, he can't.
But I thought it was his back for that reason.
But yeah, but that's a worry because he's had back injuries in the past, so you don't want to hope that's not something that's going to recur with him. I mean, because back injuries are a tricky thing. We saw here at Memphis, going back in the day a little bit, Mike Miller kind of struggled his entire career with that. I think kind of robbed him of some good years. So you definitely don't want to see a guy, especially a guy this young in his career, kind of have recurring back injuries because that can be a big-time issue. So hopefully it was just, like you said, just cramps and he's fine and he's good to go tomorrow night, or maybe even if he has to sit out tomorrow night, the game after that, there's nothing serious going forward, because they can't afford to lose Desmond Bane right now at all. But definitely early in the season, man, you definitely don't want to see that.
Yeah, when you've got other guys that are not healthy, and we don't know the extent of this, the Zaire Williams knee injury, you know, that there's not been any word on, you know, if there's suspected surgery or anything like that that I've seen. If you guys have seen an update, I saw it was a knee injury, but it says knee soreness. So I don't even know that they've had anything, any scans or anything like that done to the knee. But you don't know how long you're going to be missing him. Jaren's going to be out for a little bit here, and Dylan's not healthy. If you lose Desmond Bane right here, we're going to get to see what these rookies really have, because they're going to be playing, instead of playing 12 minutes apiece, they're going to be playing 34 minutes. And I don't know what that's going to look like for this team. I don't want to see it this early in the season.
We don't want that right now. That's not what we want, for sure.
So I think we've pretty much covered it. Again, the final score of the game, 115 to 112 in overtime. Got some free basketball on opening night for the Memphis Grizzlies. Got an NLE choppa. I love opening night. Since I've been a season ticket holder, I've never missed opening night, just because they always – I love the entertainment that they bring in for it, man.
And yeah, Kirk Whalum with the national anthem, man. He's always awesome, man. Awesome with the saxophone, man. He does a fantastic job. So, yeah.
So we will go ahead and wrap it up. Next game, Friday night in Houston against the Rockets. Super young team. They're going to be scrappy. And they're leaning into the youth as hard as they can. Although I have no idea why they're starting Bruno Fernando over.
I don't either, man. When I saw that announcement, I saw where the B-writers put that out. I was like, that's not a good situation. So I made sure I looked at the box score, and I looked at the box score, and Sengun played really well off the bench. So that's something that's going to change. I didn't get that at all, because I like Sengun a lot. I think he's a really good player.
I wonder if that was just like a disciplinary thing. Like if something happened, you know, something that we're not really going to get any word on.
It wouldn't surprise me, because Sengun's kind of he's like a fiery guy. Like he talks a lot of trash and does a lot of stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me. It could be definitely something going on there that we're not privy to, for sure. Because he's that type of guy that I could see doing something happening in practice, something like that, for sure, especially on a young team.
We got Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, Alperen Sengun.
They got some personalities.
Possible
over
rookie
there.
Of the year candidate Jabari Smith. So should be another good game. The Grizzlies are favored. They should win this game, you know, because of youth and experience of the Rockets. But any given night, any NBA team can beat any team. So they got to go in there and be prepared. And specifically, they have to be prepared because they're shorthanded. You're missing a lot of your key players three key players in your rotation. So we'll
and
go ahead and wrap
of a back
it up.
To back.
Back-to-back. Texas two-step, man.
It's not a lot of travel, at least. That's a big plus. So, who knows? And from Houston to Dallas might be 47 hours because Texas
is not. It's like four.
I knew it wasn't that big. I was just being sarcastic because Texas being so big. But we'll wrap it up and get out of here. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I am at NBA D-Will 2-1.
And you can find me on Twitter at CandaceH901. Isaac, take us home.
Yeah, man, you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA, ISAAC_NBA. Man, we'll definitely be back to recap those two games. I'm not sure if it'll be tomorrow night or we're going to do one after both, but we'll definitely get you everything you need to know to recap the fallout from those two games. And hopefully we're talking about a 3-0 Grizzlies team when we get done with those two games. So keep it locked at 18 Those Grizzlies, man. We got stuff.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.